Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So today what we're going to do is start going through part two, the glory of Goloka, the story of Gopakumar. We'll try to go through the first chapter of that today if we can, or at least as much of it as we can. And then we will tell you a little more about our test, which we'll be having on Friday. It'll be lots of fun. So we'll tell you basically what the test will be involving. So now this second part of Brihad Bhagavatamrita is titled The Glory of Goloka. It's also in seven chapters, and it is Janmajaya and Jaimini continuing their discussion in the form of Jaimini reciting more of what he's heard from Maharaj Parikshit and Uttara. Srila Sanatan Goswami gives a nice invocation, short invocation, in his first purport to this chapter. O Lord, dressed in yellow silk, I, who am full of love for you, have tied you with the ropes of hearing about you, the ropes of meditating on you, and the chains of chanting your names. Now I hold you tightly. You will never escape. Obeisances to Lord Sri Gopinath. Obeisances to Lord Sri Chaitanya Dev. By taking shelter of his gem-like beauty, even this dull and foolish person dances wonderfully. So the subject matter of the second part of Brihad Bhagavatamrita is, what is the highest abode? We have already discussed in considerable detail who are the highest devotees, who are the greatest recipients of the Lord's mercy. So, the next question is, where do they live? Where is their place? And along with that, how can we go to them? How can we go there? Yes. So, it's already understood right at the very beginning of this second part, right in the first few verses of the first chapter, it's already clear that the topmost abode is the place where the gopis live. And Lord Krishna, who is the master of the gopis, where he lives, that is already clear from the outset, as we'll see shortly. But gradually, Srila Sanatan Goswami or Maharaj Parikshit and Uttara or Janmajaya and Jaimini, they take us step by step from this earth planet again to Indraloka, Brahmaloka, and we'll be revisiting many people who we just met, actually. In fact, quite a lot of them. I don't know if it's all of them, but it may even be all of them. It's definitely a lot of them. Not all of them, but definitely a lot of the same people we met. But looking at them from slightly different perspectives. So the discussion then basically is involving this question of what is the best place the topmost abode of the topmost devotees, but also inherent in it, a very important integral part of that is how to go. What are the processes? And in fact, as we go from one abode to another and meet one devotee after another, then in many cases, they will describe in detail the particular form, particular process of devotional service that they are involved in. Yes. And the second part, although it's seven chapters, just like the first part was seven chapters, but generally the chapters are longer. That's why we're starting off kind of ahead of time in a sense. And the test will only be on the first part. So now, this first chapter then, which it's there, there's a brief summary, very brief summary on page 19 and the top of page 20 in your study guide. It's entitled Detachment. So, this is explaining really about devotional service performed by devotees on this planet, and a lot of it's to do with deity worship, actually. A lot of it's to do with deity worship. So, let us see now. Janmajaya, having heard the first part, he appreciates so much hearing who has received the Lord's greatest mercy, but he feels he wants to know more. Jaimini says, yes, I was there when Maharaj, when your father and your grandmother were discussing. I was right there. And there was more. They did discuss more. So now he says, now I want to tell you the glory of Goloka, the place of the gopis. So Uttara, then the discussion, Janmajaya and Jaimini discuss. Jaimini starts talking about the further conversation that he heard. How Uttara, even though she was exhilarated and extremely excited, having heard about Krishna and his pastimes in Vrindavan, and particularly with the gopis, she had some doubts, you could say, or she was just not clear. She wanted clarification about the different abodes. So she, first of all, she says that generally materialistic householders within this world, if they perform their duties nicely, they go to Bhua, Bhuva, or Swarga lokas. Bhuloka, Bhuva loka, or Swarga loka. And if they can become renounced, then there are four higher planetary systems, Mahaloka, Janaloka, Tapaloka, and Satyaloka or Brahmaloka. So, the householders normally go to Bhua, Bhuva, or Swa. Then the renunciates can go to the other four. And sometimes, some people, they may become liberated. Some people may become liberated. But she says the devotees, I know that they go beyond liberation. They go beyond liberation. They go to Vaikuntha, which is unobtainable, even by the liberated. So then she talks about 4.5 types of devotees. We've written them up on the board here on your left-hand side. Why don't you note them down? Because I think they're going to figure in our final test. Four types of devotees: Jnana Bhaktas, Shuddha Bhaktas, Prema Bhaktas, Prema Para Bhaktas, and Prema Atura Bhaktas. Jnana Bhaktas, of course, means devotees situated in knowledge, or devotees are attached to knowledge. Knowledge about devotional service, not impersonal knowledge, really. Knowledge about devotional service. But still, they are interested on the basis of knowledge and not so much simply serving. Can anyone think of an example? There are numerous examples, actually. Kalyapani Prabhu. Uddhava. No, not Uddhava. The four Kumars. They're four examples, I guess. Any others? Dhruv? No, not Dhruva. He wasn't a Jnana Bhakta. Four Kumars, he said the four Kumars, yeah. Yeah. Shonakra and the sages in Naimisharani, are they generally, or often at least, considered in that category? Sanatan Goswami suggests Bharat Maharaj also. He was something like that. A type of a Jnana Bhakta. Not an impersonalist devotee, some sort of cross, but interested in knowledge of devotional service, but not so much into the service, into the rules and regulations, for example, but not so much the activities, but more the concept of the rules, the do's and do nots. So they're Jnana Bhaktas. They're actually considered a half devotee. We said they're four and a half. So the Jnana Bhaktas are considered a half. Then there are the Shuddha Bhaktas, the pure devotees. So, as distinct from the Jnana Bhaktas, they are primarily interested in serving. And they haven't got like this somewhat separate interest of cultivating knowledge, even about devotional service. But they're interested in simply serving, doing things for the pleasure of the Lord. The example that Sanatan Goswami gives is Ambarish Maharaj. He is famous for performing all nine of the devotional activities, Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, and so on. Then there are the Prema Bhaktas, devotees who are serving, but they're serving out of love. There is a special impetus there. Can you think of an example there? Now, and remember, there are higher categories coming, of course. So don't say, you know, the gopis or someone like that. Narada Muni. Well, that's possible. Kalyapani Prabhu? That's also possible. Mother Yashoda? No, not Mother Yashoda. Hanuman. That is the example given, actually, by Sanatan Goswami. He's a classic example, actually, of the loving servitor, dedicated on the basis of love, dedicated to serving, meaning in the mood of servant, but out of love, intense affection. Then, Prema Para devotees, devotees situated in great love, In other words, the service, being a servant, is not such a prominent feature of their sort of whole outlook on life and perspective on Krishna and how they're conducting themselves, but love is. So, but of course they're not the highest because there are higher, so who might you think could be in that category? Mother Radhi Manjari. Not Uddhava. Not Uddhava. The Pandavas. Very good. Yes. We saw that in the first part, how they were beyond just serving. They were serving, but they were beyond that because they were also situated in friendship. And Krishna was serving them. It was a very intimate, loving relationship, and not distinct from that of Hanuman, the classic loving servitor, because they're equal to the Lord. At least oftentimes, in many ways, they're equal to the Lord, even sometimes apparently superior. Then, devotee, prema-atura, devotees overwhelmed by love and just swimming in all the transformations of love, who could you think of who might be an example? Not Radharani. Sorry? The Brajavasis, no. It's Uddhava. Finally, we found a category for Uddhava. He is prematura. Completely overwhelmed by love, captivated by love, just being thrown around by love. Like that. So, the context here is that Uttara is talking about different levels of people and the different places they go. Materialists, they go to different places. Then there's the position of liberation. Now these are the devotees, 4.5 types of devotees. So she says, these devotees normally go to Vaikuntha. But she feels that it would not be right if they all went to the same place. It would not be fair. She feels that in Vaikuntha, there is a tendency for there to not be so much in the way of distinctions between different levels of devotees. Even though there may be, on closer examination, different levels of devotees, but there's not so much distinction in Vaikuntha. So she asks that, what about those devotees who are interested only in serving Radharani and the gopis and chanting the names of Krishna, who is the Lord of the Rasa Dance? Where would they go? So she asks her question. She puts it all succinctly in one question. Therefore, we should expect that there is some suitable place for them beyond Vaikuntha. There certainly must be such a place. So please reveal it to me. She feels Vaikuntha is the highest place she knows of where people like these 4.5 types may go. But what about those who are higher, like the gopis? And where will those people go who are attached to the gopis and serving like the gopis? Because remember, that was the recommendation given by Parikshit Maharaj to his mother. Follow in the footsteps of the gopis. Try and serve the way that they serve. That was his recommendation. That's how he concluded the first part. So Uttara is asking, so if we do like that, where are we going to go then? What abode will we go to? So in order to clarify this point for his mother, Maharaj Parikshit tells a story. So here we have, you know, three levels, it looks like three levels of narration. Jaimini to Janmajaya, Maharaj Parikshit to Uttara, and we're going to have Gopakumar to the Brahmin. Actually, the Brahmin's name is Janasharma, although it's not mentioned till towards the end, I think, of the book. But his name is Janasharma. So there are three types of levels in the narration. So Maharaj Parikshit explains. First of all, he glorifies the Lord who delivered him within the womb of Uttara. Then he says, I've heard so many things from Shukadev, and I want to tell you a story which I learnt from Shukadev. This is what he says. Now, what I'm about to tell you, the story of Gopakumar and the Brahmin, I heard from Shukadev. So it begins, first of all, by introducing the Brahmin. Now, up on the board here, you'll see we've written some other things. Just so you know where we're going and where we're going to go, we've put here the main kind of events and phases in the story, first of all, of the Brahmin, up until he meets Gopakumar. And then when he meets Gopakumar and Gopakumar starts telling his story, the different stages that his story starts going through. As I say, just so you know where we're going. So, there was a Brahmin. His name was Janasharma. He lived in Pragjyotishapur. It's in Assam. Oh, okay, that's good. And the name is there in point number 2 on page 19. Pragjyotishapur. Now, it is apparently a sort of favorite pilgrimage place for worshippers of Durga. And there is one famous deity of Durga there called Kamakya Devi. And her name is there also in point number 2. Kamakya Devi. Kama means material desire. So she is a particular form of Durga who is apparently quite benevolent and willing to fulfill her worshippers' material desires. So this Janasharma, actually he is a Mathura Brahmin. He is from Mathura, but because he had material desires, he became attracted to worshipping Durga, so he moved to Assam, quite a long way to go, so he could worship Kamakya Devi and try to fulfill his material desires. But he is a Mathura Brahmin, actually. And he is a penniless Brahmin at that. So I guess his worship of Kamakya Devi maybe wasn't going so well or something. But he's clearly described as being penniless, living there in Pragjyotishapur. So one night, in a dream, Kamakya Devi herself appeared to him and gave him a 10-syllabled Madan Gopal mantra. Now, it's just an interesting little point. I don't know if it has any bearing on anything, but Sanatan Goswami, his particular Ishtadeva was Madan Gopal or Madan Mohan. They're the same form of the Lord. Madan Gopal. Anyway, that's just an interesting point, and he happens to be the author. So she gave him this 10-syllabled Madan Gopal mantra. He woke up. He thought, that was a really extraordinary dream, but it was just a dream, so he forgot about it. A few days later, she appeared in his dream again, gave him the mantra for a second time. Then he thought, oh, okay, better take it seriously. She instructed him how to chant, how to mark the body with its syllables, and to make different mudras while chanting it. So now he has this mantra. She did not really explain to him what was the end result of it all going to be. Although she gave him the mantra and told him how to chant it and certain sort of formalities involved, but why and what would the result be, she didn't tell him. Now, what is this mantra? Well, Sanatana Goswami doesn't tell us. At least I don't know. I don't know if any of you know. But in the purport, Gopi Puranadana Prabhu's purport, he says, the 10-syllable Gopal mantra is defined in esoteric terms in the book Krama Dipika, an old Vaishnav tantra by Keshava Acharya. Vedic and tantric mantras should not be chanted by anyone who has not been initiated in them. Therefore, when books discuss these mantras, special efforts are made to keep the exact syllables of the mantra disguised. Sometimes a few syllables are changed or inverted in the description. Or sometimes, as in the Krama Dipika's presentation of this Gopal mantra, the explanation is impossible to understand by those who are not familiar with the mantra. So, and then he gives the description which is given in Krama Dipika, and it tells you a few of the syllables, but it doesn't tell you all of them. So anyway, there is this very esoteric Madan Gopal mantra. And this Brahmin Janasharma was given this mantra. And he started chanting it. But as we said, he didn't really know what is this mantra about. But he had faith in Kamakya Devi, so he thought, I'd better chant it. And he did chant it, and he really got into chanting it. As a result, his life changed, but he didn't know why his life was changing. Just before lunch, I met with one devotee in the MVT complex called Ram Das. I don't know if you know him. He's been here for a couple of years, and he's here basically to leave his body, although it's been taking longer than expected. Very nice devotee. So the same thing happened with Janasharma, this Brahmin. His life changed. He became detached. He lost interest in worshipping Kamakya Devi and gaining material things, which previously was the focal point in his life. After all, he moved from Mathura to Assam, and by foot. That must be a long walk. So in other words, he was very interested in material gain. But he gave up that altogether. And He just found himself inspired that what is the goal of life? What is it all about? Now, he didn't know that this change in attitude and change of perspective on life was happening simply because of his chanting of the mantra. He didn't understand it. And he didn't understand that, in a sense, all I have to do is just keep on chanting and the change will continue, and eventually the change will come to some sort of conclusive point simply by chanting the mantra. But he thought, let me go, let me leave here and find out what is the goal of life. So it was all coming from his chanting of the mantra. But he didn't understand it, couldn't understand it yet. So it was having an effect on him, despite his lack of knowledge and even his lack of faith. I mean, he had some faith, maybe. At least he had faith in Durga, therefore he was doing it. He was doing it because he thought, Durga wants me to do it. But it was not exactly that he had faith in it yet. He comes to that point, but so far he does not have faith in it, in the chanting of the mantra. And he certainly doesn't understand it at all. Yeah. So off he went, and he ended up at Ganga Sagar. We've noted that there on the board. And he met some householder Brahmins, and they were big experts in Karmakandya. And they were involved in so many rituals. The whole idea was how to go to Swarga, how to become materially elevated to the heavenly planets. And they were very Paka, very expert and very dedicated. From morning to night, they had no other program than all their mantras and tantras and smritis and yajnas and whatnot. All these things. So impressed by their dedication, he thought, maybe this is the goal of life. This is what I'm looking for. So he took up that practice, but because he was so impressed by Durga, he continued chanting his mantra. After a little while, he lost interest. He spontaneously lost interest because of the mantra. The mantra purified his heart, so he lost interest. And he became dissatisfied with that program, so he gave it up. Next he went to Kashi. There he met some impersonalist sannyasis. And Kashi, of course, that is the place of the impersonalists. They were all interested in impersonal liberation, very philosophical, very knowledgeable, and they talked about liberation as if it was just readily available, that they had it in their hands and they could just give it to him, and it wasn't a big thing. So he thought, this may be the goal of life, and he started considering becoming an impersonalist sannyasi himself. Although, out of respect for Durga, he continued chanting his mantra. One night, the deity of the mantra, Madan Gopal, appeared in his dream. So when he saw the deity, when he saw Madan Gopal, now, he didn't really know who this is other than being the deity of the mantra. But the deity of the mantra was so beautiful that finally he became captivated by the mantra. And he started to appreciate the mantra and focus more on the mantra. And eventually he stopped doing anything other than chanting this Madan Gopal mantra. Then Lord Shiva and Kamakya Devi appeared in a dream. The same Kamakya Devi, but in order to give extra sort of impetus, her husband Lord Shiva came along too. And he preached to the Brahmin, Jana Sharma, leave here, go to Mathura, go to Vrindavan. So off he went. Off he went, chanting and chanting and chanting this mantra. However, along the way, he stopped in Prayag. There he found some devotees. They were Vaishnavs. By Vaishnavs, I mean they worshipped Lord Vishnu and his avatars. Yeah. So they had a whole array of deities. Lord Nrisingadev, Lord Ram, Lord Kurama, Varaha, Matsya, and so many different forms of the Lord. And he saw one. There was one deity called Gopal. And he thought, this looks very similar to the deity of my mantra, Madan Gopal. And he was wondering, is it the same person? But then the devotees there told him that all these different forms, they're forms of one person. So he was looking and then he thought, it can't be my deity. Can't be, because my deity doesn't have a form like all these different forms. So he became a little confused. But he stayed there and became somewhat purified in their association. There was one deity called Madhava. One deity called Madhava, who looked similar, except he had four hands. So eventually, Jana Sharma, the Brahmin, concluded, no. My Lord, the deity of my mantra, is not this Madhava. First of all, he doesn't have all these other forms. And secondly, he doesn't have four arms. My Madan Gopal has two arms. So he concluded he should just continue chanting his mantra. So now, if you see what has happened to him so far, he's gone from Karmakandiya through impersonal liberation, now through the worship of Lord Vishnu and his avatars, and gradually he is becoming attracted and impelled towards the worship of Krishna in Vrindavan. So one night, he was chanting his, or one day in fact, he was chanting his mantra, he fell into a trance. When he came out, he realized it was very late. And it seems he was chanting a set number of mantras because he got into anxiety. It's too late to finish my chanting for today. So he fell asleep. And then Madhava appeared in his dream. Lord Madhava, that special one although forearmed, still he was the special one amongst all those Vishnu deities who had some resemblance to his deity. So Lord Madhava appeared in his dream and told him, you must follow the instruction you got from Lord Shiva and go to Vrindavan immediately. Why are you waiting here? So off he went to Vrindavan. Now, when he was moving around in Vrindavan, he noticed very interesting things. Well, while he had been chanting his mantra, certain visions had been coming to his mind of cows and certain types of scenery and rivers of a certain type. When he got to Vrindavan, he noticed, this is like what I see when I am chanting my mantra. So he felt happy that I'm making progress. I'm making progress here. So he carried on chanting his mantra, chanting and chanting, till he came to Keshigat, just nearby. He came to Keshigat. Then near Keshigat, he heard someone crying in the very dense forest. So he forced his way through the forest. As he was coming closer to this person crying, he heard they were chanting the names of the Supreme Lord. Then he saw one cowherd boy. And you know what he thought? He thought, this is the deity of my mantra. I have found him. So he threw himself at the feet of the cowherd boy. So this is Gopakumar. Gopakumar is a liberated soul, an inhabitant of Goloka Vrindavan, who is at that time in Gokula Vrindavan, here on this planet. What had happened was that morning, Srimati Radharani told him, go to Keshigat and I have some special service for you to do there. Sanatan Goswami explains this. So when the cowherd boy, this liberated soul and direct personal associate of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, saw this Brahman at his feet, he understood he has been sent by Srimati Radharani, and this is why I was sent here. This is my mission, to help this person. Because he was, so elevated and practically omniscient in a certain sense, he immediately understood the whole story of Janasharma. He immediately understood he is chanting the same mantra as me. Oh, we didn't mention that, did we? That prior to this cowherd boy becoming that liberated inhabitant of Goloka Vrindavan, he also went through a whole process of advancement. And what was it based on? Chanting the 10-syllable Madan Gopal mantra. So this Brahman appealed to the cowherd boy, Gopakumar. As we mentioned before, Gopakumar means cowherd boy. So, this Brahman, Janasharma, he appealed to Gopakumar that different people have told me different aims of life and different methods for approaching them. But still I don't know what to do. And all I do is what the goddess told me to do. But he says, even these duties, I have no idea what the result will be. And I don't even know what I'm doing, actually. I do it, but I don't know what it is. So we can just see, the point is made. Even though he has made tremendous advancements so far, but there's a lack of knowledge, there's a tremendous lack of knowledge, but still he's managed to make advancement. So, Gopakumar considered what to do. He could see that this Brahman has already become quite advanced in his own way. You know, sometimes it's like that. There's the story in Chaitanya Charitamrita of that one fisherman who caught Lord Chaitanya in his net, and he touched Lord Chaitanya and became immediately overwhelmed by symptoms of bhava, but he didn't know what had happened. He thought he'd been possessed by a ghost. So he went running down the beach to try to find an exorcist. And he met Swarup Damodar, who was coming looking for the Lord with some other devotees. Swarup Damodar could immediately tell he has symptoms of bhava, but he is a fisherman. So, you know, you wouldn't expect him to have symptoms of bhava. So he must have found the Lord. And that fisherman said that, I found a ghost. I'm looking for an exorcist. Swarup Damodar said, it's your lucky day. I happen to be a famous exorcist. So actually, I don't recall hearing much more about what happened to the fisherman. But at least the point is there that some people may make advancement, real advancement, but in a state of ignorance. So this is what happened to this Brahman. And Gopakumar could tell that this is what had happened. He was actually quite advanced, although he was in a state of utter ignorance, total ignorance about what he was doing, what was the result of what he was doing, and what was the goal of life, although he was looking for the goal of life because he was doing that chanting. So, just see the potency. This is one of the main points which is going to come out in this whole narration. Because as we said, Gopakumar has already been through a similar type of experience. Very similar type of experience. Also in ignorance. So the point, the Brahman was given the mantra by Durga. Gopakumar is going to be given the mantra by a devotee. Well, Durga's a devotee, so you could say that the Brahman was initiated by Durga in a sense. He was given a mantra, so that's a type of initiation. The connection between Gopakumar and his spiritual master who gives him the mantra is closer, really, somewhat closer. But this is one of the main themes that is there, underlying the whole story, that we should always chant the mantras which are given by the spiritual master and understand that this is like the foundation of our advancement, following the instructions of the spiritual master and chanting the holy names as given by the spiritual master. And even if it's done, well, initially the Brahman has been doing it, what to speak of without knowledge, he's been doing it even without faith in the mantra. He didn't even know it was the mantra, to have faith in the mantra, until after a little while he got the idea. But the thing is that these practices, this practice of chanting the holy names given by the spiritual master and the mantras given by the spiritual master is so powerful and so important on that most basic foundational level in our spiritual lives, that as long as we do these things without offenses, then even if we're lacking in knowledge, even if we're not completely faithful, but a great result, some result will be there, and even a great result can be there. You know, the same point is made by Lord Chaitanya when he instructs Sanatan Goswami about the 64 different processes or aspects of devotional service, different devotional activities. He gives five at the end, the last five, as being particularly important. Sadhu Sangha Nama Kirtan Bhagavat Shravan Maturavas Srimurtir Shradaya Sevan. That we should associate with the devotees, chant the holy names, hear Srimad Bhagavatam, reside in Mathura, and worship the deity with faith. But Lord Chaitanya says that if you perform even one of these, even without faith, but as long as you do it without offenses, then it can bring you to the level of bhava. And even if it doesn't bring you to the level of bhava, we can appreciate that it's going to have some far-reaching effects on you. So this point is here now with the Brahman, and it's going to come out in the story of Gopikumar very, very vividly. So it's something we should always bear in mind. So Gopikumar is now evaluating the Brahman. And he can see that he is very advanced. He's actually very advanced even. He needs to do more Sankirtan. This is what Gopikumar thought. He needs to do, instead of just chanting mantras, he should chant the holy names. Yeah. So his intention is to instruct him in chanting the holy names. But then he thinks the best way to direct this person is going to be to tell him my own story. First of all, he's just going to tell him to chant the holy names. But then he thinks, no, I must tell him my own story. So even though there's a saying, swa prashamsha dhruvo mrityu, self-praise is as good as death. That's a good one, isn't it? Self-praise is as good as death. And Gopikumar, as such a great transcendental personality, was well aware of things like that. But still, he understood that whatever doubts the Brahman has left, they won't be properly dispelled unless I tell him my story, because his story is so similar. So therefore he doesn't hesitate to make this decision. Yes, I will tell you my story. So then he starts telling his story. Now, an interesting point is that he's going to tell his own story. And it involves, for example, going to heavenly planets, even the planet of Lord Brahma, staying there for a long time. And normally if human beings, or at least we can say that on these higher planets, time passes differently from how it passes here. So the cowherd boy, Gopikumar, has already spent long time as a cowherd boy, but he's still a cowherd boy. Now, how this has happened, well, we're going to hear shortly. But he's still a young boy, despite having been a young boy an awfully long time. So he tells a story that before he became fortunate like that, he was a cowherd boy at Govardhan Hill. And with his friends, they would herd the cows here and there, all over Vraj Mandala, actually. But from time to time, they would meet one great Brahmin devotee with a golden-colored body, very beautiful, and incredible characteristics. Sometimes he would laugh, sometimes he would dance, sometimes he'd roll on the ground and muddy the hoof prints of the cows with his tears. And he was always chanting the names of Krishna. This amazing person. So the boys, they would see this devotee regularly. And he would treat them very nicely. Actually, he would come to them and offer his obeisances to them and embrace them and kiss them. And Gopikumar would bring him milk products. Then, after a while, the great devotee told Gopikumar that if you want to fulfill all your desires, if you want to receive the mercy of the Lord of the universe, then go and bathe at Keshi Ghat and come back, and I will give you something through which you will achieve these two things: fulfill all your desires and receive the mercy of the Lord of the universe. Now, he's about to give him the same mantra, but we can see already he's instructing him a little bit more than Kamakya Devi instructed the Brahmin. So Gopikumar went and bathed at Keshi Ghat and came back and was given the Madan Gopal mantra. But his spiritual master was about to explain more about it, how to chant it, for example, what the object of chanting it was. He didn't even explain these things. Suddenly, he became overwhelmed by ecstasy. And Brihad Bhagavatamrita says, he began sobbing like a woman who has just lost her lover. He just broke down, crying and crying. Then he composed himself, but Gopikumar felt frightened. He didn't want to ask him anything. And then he disappeared. So, Gopikumar knows these two things. He knows this is a mantra through which I can fulfill all my desires and get the mercy of the Lord of the universe, but he doesn't know, how do I chant it? Out aloud, silently, at certain times, all the time? He doesn't know. what to do about it. So, out of curiosity, he just starts chanting it in different ways. And his life starts to change. He feels more and more impelled. I want to find this Lord of the universe. But where is he? So he leaves Vrindavan to search for the Lord of the universe. So just like the Brahmin, he doesn't understand the mantra. Actually, he doesn't understand that he is already there in the place of the Lord of the universe. He is chanting the mantra of the Lord of the universe. And if he just keeps chanting the mantra of the Lord of the universe in the place of the Lord of the universe in Vrindavan, he's going to realize the Lord in due course of time. Just like the Brahmin, he thinks, I've got to go. He becomes inspired. I want to find the Lord of the universe. So he's making advancement, but still he's confused. So he leaves Vrindavan. He leaves Vrindavan and makes his way somewhere to the banks of the Ganges. There he finds one Brahmin, devotee, who is worshipping a Shalagram Shila. So here we are, we're on point two with Gopa Kumar. There is this one Brahmin worshipping a small Shalagram Shila, his personal deity, and he's not a mendicant, he lives there, but he's not a wealthy man, so it's very simple worship as some just quite, you could say, materially ordinary type of devotee would perform. Nothing elaborate or opulent at all. Simple worship. So, Gopa Kumar hears the conch shell blow. He sees the Brahmin worshipping the Shalagram Shila and runs over and asks, what is this? Pointing at the Shila. And the Brahmin says, it is the Lord of the universe. Gopa Kumar thinks, I've done it so quickly. It didn't take long. I have found the Lord of the universe. So he becomes very excited, ecstatic. That Brahmin gave him some of the Charanamrita and some of the other remnants of the little offerings that he was making to his Shalagram Shila. Put him in a box, the Shalagram Shila, closed the box. Gopa Kumar was horrified, completely shocked. Said, you're putting the Supreme Lord of the universe into a box. What an inappropriate place. He hasn't even eaten properly yet. How is he going to sleep if he's still hungry? And just becomes too anxious, overwhelmed with anxiety. So that Brahmin, he was a very nice devotee, humble devotee, and in a very sincere way, he apologized and said, you know, I'm so sorry. It's just the best I can do. I'm just a very poor person. And there's nothing more I can do. But if you would like to see the Lord of the universe worshipped in a more opulent and more fitting way, perhaps, more glorious way, a higher level of worship, then there is one king living nearby. And he is a great devotee. He has in his palace grounds, there is one nice temple, and he is maintaining the worship there of one beautiful deity, and there's fantastic deity worship going on there. So you just go there. But before you go, here, take some prasadam. Gopikumar offers dandavats several times, apologizes for not having time to take prasadam. He's too anxious to see the Lord of the universe, and just goes to that kingdom. So he ran into the temple. There he saw a deity of four-armed Narayan being worshipped very nicely, very opulently. And what a beautiful deity, not just in a certain sense a little stone, but you could see all the features of the Lord, and dressed very elegantly and decorated so beautifully, so fittingly. Gopikumar was just so happy, he collapsed, thinking, now my life is a success. I have found the Lord of the universe. So he stayed there. He just stayed there. He just lived there in the temple. The devotees sort of befriended him and adopted him and gave him prasadam and whatever necessities he required. But he just kept chanting his mantra all throughout. He's chanting his mantra. So then a very remarkable, well, all the time he was just watching the deity while chanting his mantra. Then something extraordinary happened. He became attracted to worshiping the deity. So he learned how to do that. Actually, it's coming from the mantra, really, from his chanting. So then a really extraordinary thing happened. The king, who had no son, he became attached to Gopikumar. He would come to the temple every day. There would be Gopikumar, this ecstatic devotee, just so blissful, just doing so much service, so nice. The king became attached to Gopikumar and adopted him as his son. After a little while, the king died, and Gopikumar became the king. Yes, by fate. Providence is rather amazing sometimes. He became the king. So what did he do? He turned the whole kingdom into a festival. There was nothing but festivals for the deity. It just became, life became one big festival for everyone in the kingdom. He used all the kingdom's resources and all his own resources as the king just to glorify the deity, have festivals, and it was just a permanent Maha festival. It was like that. It was really incredible. But there were some problems. there were some neighboring kings who weren't devotees. They didn't like him. Sometimes he heard rumors they were going to invade his kingdom and stop the worship. So he got into anxiety. Sometimes the emperor, there was an emperor above him. Sometimes he would demand taxes and things, and Gopakumar was disturbed to some degree sometimes. But there was a worse thing. There was a thing much worse. Can any of you guess what was that worse thing? Sundarananda Prabhu. Oh no, he didn't lose his desire to worship the deity at all. He didn't have so much time. That wasn't the worst thing. He didn't fall down either. He definitely didn't go anywhere near falling down. The worst thing was that sometimes some very respectable and high class and actually slightly snooty people, snobby people, would sometimes refuse the prasadam if perhaps it had fallen on the floor or something like that, or some lower caste people had touched it or something like that. Some of these high class people would refuse the prasadam. So he says, this was like darts shot into my vital points and caused me great disappointment. So this was the worst thing. He just couldn't tolerate this. But still I had no desire to leave the Lord, whom I had long desired to see, and whose personal association I had now obtained. However, one day, some pilgrims came from the south. This is all up in North India. Well, it would have to be, being near the Ganges. Anyway, some pilgrims came from Jagannath Puri, and they told Gopakumar, King Gopakumar, that you should see Lord Jagannath. And they told him that the prasadam there, that there are rules, unbreakable rules, which everyone has to follow, that even if the prasadam falls on the ground, people still have to take it. Even if it has been left sitting for days and weeks or any length of time, still it has to be respected. Even if some lower class person or even if an animal has touched it, still it is no less. And everyone accepts it like that. When Gopakumar heard this, he thought, wow, I want to go there. And those people said that the inhabitants there, the people who live there, are such great devotees. They said, even the donkeys have four arms. Well, of course, donkeys have four arms anyway, but I think it means they have some extra arms. So, you know, maybe they have six arms, something like that. But they're like inhabitants of Vaikuntha, basically. Everyone is like that. And in Chaitanya Bhagavat, there's a description. Lord Krishna tells Lord Shiva that in Jagannath Puri, everyone has four arms. That even when you're sleeping, lying down, it's considered dandavats, prostrated obeisances. When you're just walking to the shops, it's considered holy parikrama. And he says, even, believe it or not, even if the people there eat fish, it is not different from taking prasadam. anyway. That is what it says. So, but they these devotees don't say that in Brihad Bhagavatamrita, but basically they say that the prasadam is very special and the devotees are very special and the deity, the deity, Lord Jagannath, is just the most incredible deity with his blooming, blooming indicates wide open lotus eyes. You've never seen anything like this. So Gopakumar quickly hands over the kingdom to some other relatives of the previous king and exits to Jagannath Puri. So now he's in Jagannath Puri. He races to Jagannath Puri. When he arrives there, he just goes, as he's racing to the temple, he offers dandavats to everyone on the street. He races into the temple screaming, "Now I have perfected my life. Now I have found the Lord of the universe," causing quite a commotion until the guards beat him with sticks. Then he becomes a little more composed. So now he's there in Jagannath Puri, and sure enough, everything is even better. Yeah. You know, it's better on the level of deity worship on that level. You get the idea? You know, on the level of it being the abode of the Lord, he hasn't sort of tuned into that so much. There's a deeper level to it, as there's a deeper level to Vrindavan, which he left looking for the Lord of Vrindavan. But he sees on the level of deity worship, on that earthly level, this is better. So he lives in the temple. He's very happy. Then one day, let's see what happens. Well, he's chanting his mantra unstoppably. One day, he sees his spiritual master having darshan of Lord Jagannath. Then he himself looks at Lord Jagannath, becomes entranced. By the time he comes out of his trance, his spiritual master has gone. But a few days later, he finds him on the beach, chanting and dancing in ecstasy. So then, his spiritual master tells him more about the mantra. He tells him that through chanting this mantra, you'll receive whatever your heart desires. Well, he already told him that, basically. But he says, this is another way of serving Jagannath. You should have faith in this and never give it up. In other words, he implies it is a better way of worshipping Jagannath, actually. Then he gives Gopakumar three benedictions. Says, by the potency of this mantra, may you live a very long time. Second, may you always keep the appearance of a cowherd boy. And may you develop the appropriate mentality for realizing the mature fruit of the mantra. So even though they're in Jagannath Puri, the guru is into the mantra. So three benedictions. May you live a long time. You always keep the form of a cowherd boy. And may you develop the appropriate mentality for realizing the mantra, getting the fruit of the mantra. And what is that? That is Madan Gopal. Yes. So actually, his guru has followed him there. And it's all part of the process for bringing him back to Vrindavan. And this is why, when Janasharma, the Brahmin, meets him, that he's still a cowherd boy on the basis of this benediction. So then his guru tells him that you will see me from time to time. I think five times, in fact, they meet. Anyway, from time to time, he says, I think five times, we'll see. From time to time we'll meet, sometimes in Vrindavan and sometimes in other places. And then he disappears again. So now Gopakumar is depressed in separation from his guru. And he's also feeling separation from Vrindavan. As he chants more and more, he becomes more and more attached to Vrindavan. Although he doesn't understand exactly how it's all happening or why it's happening, you know, one aspect explained by Sanatan Goswami of this third benediction is that of maintaining or developing a suitable mentality for realizing the mantra. One aspect Sanatan Goswami has explained is that Gopakumar remains ignorant. Wherever he goes, he doesn't know about it until just the moment before he goes there practically, or just immediately before he goes there. He's never heard of Lord Indra, doesn't know who he is. Lord Brahma, Brahma Loka. He knows nothing about these people or these places. So therefore, there's no impediment in the sense of some knowledge being an impediment. So his ignorance becomes like an asset. Anyway, let us just try to quickly finish this. I'm sure we can do it. So he is yearning and yearning to go to Vrindavan. Now, then, a very remarkable thing happens. The king dies. His son has become a renounced devotee and leaves home, refusing to be the king. The ministers who visit the Jagannath temple every day and see Gopakumar, and Gopakumar has become a bit of a prominent person there in the Jagannath temple, they look at him and they recognize in him some signs of suitability to be a king. So they pray to Lord Jagannath to reveal who should be the king. In a dream, Lord Jagannath tells them, Gopakumar. So Gopakumar becomes the king of Jagannath Puri. So what does he do? He turns the whole place into a festival. Same program. It just goes, the whole Jagannath Puri becomes one huge festival. Everyone goes totally overboard. But still, as he's chanting his mantra, he's feeling attracted to going to Vrindavan. Then Lord Jagannath does a very extraordinary thing. Lord Jagannath sows the seed of dissatisfaction with Jagannath Puri in the mind of Gopakumar. Gopakumar sees that there is a group of devotees who have a special relationship with Jagannath, which he cannot have. These are those special, anyway, some special devotees born in Orissa. They are, anyway, they're described as special Orion devotees. They come and deal with Lord Jagannath in incredibly intimate and personal ways. And he, even though he's the king, he's not allowed in. So he becomes a little uptight with these devotees. Yes. He felt a little jealous. So, at the same time as the king, he found he couldn't render as much devotional service as he wanted to, and he became frustrated. Then one night, Lord Jagannath appeared in a dream and told him, Mathura is more dear to me than Jagannath Puri because it is my birthplace. So you should go there, and in due course of time you'll see me there in the form you desire. So then, Gopikuma hands the kingdom over to some other relatives of the previous king and goes back to Vrindavan. And that is the end of the first chapter. I hope we didn't race through it too fast. Any comments or questions? Yeah, well, that's a good question, good point. That normally we associate Durga with just material desire and fulfilling people's material desires and dragging them away from Krishna consciousness. Or, you know, we don't normally hear about her helping people as she, in this case, is described as having done. But anyway, she does sometimes. And that was mentioned in the first part when, who was it? Was it Lord Shiva? Or was it Lord Brahma? Was saying that Durga and Shiva have both helped people become devotees. Give liberation, that's another thing. But I think it's Lord Brahma says that both he and his wife, they make people into devotees. And Sanatan Goswami gives as an example in the case of Lord Shiva, the Prachetas, and in the case of Durga, he gives the example of Jana Sharma. He's a Mathura Brahman. You know, there's also some significance in that. In other words, he is like a latent devotee, really, but he's become deviated. Yeah. So that's also a consideration. But it is a fact. The point in principle is that sometimes Durga helps people to become devotees. Not often. It's rare. Yeah. But this is a point that I think it was Lord Brahma made, that sometimes she helps people to become devotees. So in this case, this is an example. How do we understand Gopikumar and the Brahman? The Brahman is becoming liberated. Gopikumar has already become liberated and is explaining how he became liberated, more than liberated, how he went back to Godhead and came to the level of love of God. The Brahman appears to not be qualified, but it appears that Durga felt he was qualified in terms of his character and, you know, like that. So therefore she gave him the mantra. And it appears that he chanted it offenselessly because he made advancement. Yeah. Prabhupada ki jai.